So first, let's have a little bit of review of what we know already. All the Sefirot are starting from the level of Keter, which is above them. Keter is the force that is allowing us to exist. This is the divine energy in its pure form, before it's becoming filtered through all the Sefirot. And in our own emotional world, Keter is compared to the driving force, the emotional energy that we have. And we were comparing lack of this motivation to exist, which in plain language is usually called depression, to absence of this energy, and then the life force to Keter. And then after Keter, we have the beginning of all the Sefirot. First one is Chochmah, which is the first one of the three intellectual Sefirot. They are in red color over here. The intellectual Sefirot are the beginning because by us, human beings, who are called Homo sapiens, because at one point people had a silly belief that we are actually logical and we are actually intellectual. I don't know why would somebody think that of people, but back in those days, maybe people were actually intellectual. We have the very beginning of everything with our intellect, because before we are having any emotions towards something, we have to understand what it is. I need to understand that something is dangerous in order to be afraid of it. I need to understand that something is good in order to love it. So everything is beginning with our understanding. If people would not have intellectual function, they would not be able to have emotions as well. So Chochmah is the very beginning of our intellect. This is our ability to grasp the concept in its entirety as a general idea. This is the initial thought. And then, after that, it goes into Bina. Bina develops it, and Bina is able to take it apart into various subcategories, sub-ideas, and to find practical applications of it. That's Bina. Then, after I have a thought, and then I have developed this thought might be very well understood by me, but it is still a purely theoretical concept. It has no relevance to me. There is an example which is brought in Hasidut. In olden days, in the Jewish world, there was almost 100% literacy among the population because the Jewish religion is mandating education. But outside of the Jewish villages in Europe, most of people were illiterate. And usually in each village, there was one person who knew how to read and write. And if somebody would need to send a letter or to read a letter that he receives, he would go to this person and it would be his job. You pay him a couple cents and he is going to read this letter for you. Well, listen, every village has only one tailor. Every village has only one blacksmith. So obviously every village needs to have only one person who knows how to read and write. Why would there be a need for more than one person in the village to read and write? I don't even understand. You want to teach everybody how to read and write? Well, you're not teaching everybody how to be a blacksmith, right? So it just makes sense. So back in those days, these villages had only one person who knew how to read and write. And if there is a letter which is arriving to somebody, you go to this person and he is reading it for you. He is writing a response if you need one to be written. So here is this guy that receives a letter and he is running to this person who knows how to read this letter for him. And he is reading the letter, and the letter says that your father, who lives in a village next door, passed away. The person who received this letter, who just heard this news, is fainting. So the question is being asked, one second, who was the first one to receive this information? The guy who reads the letter. So if he is the initial source of this information, he should faint first. He should faint before the guy who hears the news faints. But it seems like the guy who read the letter is totally fine, and the one who heard the news, he's the one who fainted. Why? Well, the answer is obvious. Because the guy who read the letter doesn't even know who is this letter talking about. Who is it that passed away? But the person who heard the news sees that his father died. That's why he faints. For the person who is reading the letter, this is purely intellectual, theoretical information and nothing more. It has no practical application. It doesn't relate to him. The person who is hearing the news, the person who the letter was addressed to, receives it as something practical. And this is why he is fainting. This is the difference between Chochma Bina and Da'at. For the person who this letter was addressed to, it was Da'at. Then we are moving to emotions, because as we said, Da'at is the bridge between intellect and emotions. And that is allowing our intellect to have an effect on our emotions. If information is perceived by me as something practical which is relating to my life, then it affects my emotions. This is why this guy fainted. So now, when we are moving to emotions, we spoke about two emotions, chesed and gevura, kindness and strictness. And we said that very often in our culture, it is misunderstood what is chesed, kindness, and what is strictness. Very often people think that strictness is anger and kindness is being this soft, agreeable to everything person. Well, not necessarily. We mentioned last time that most of the time people's anger comes from chesed as a derivative of chesed, because it is a desire to have an effect on the world outside of you. It is an outbound emotion. And people who have a lot of a gvura in a country, they know how to control themselves. Gvura is the ability of control, and control in the Torah is mainly speaking about self-control. So chesed is love and kindness, a desire to influence others, a desire to give, and a desire to get close to other people. And gvura is strictness, the ability to hold yourself back, and it is a source of a desire to stay away from others. So this is chesed and gevura, and this is where we stopped last time. And today we are going to be talking about the next sefira, which is tiferet. Word tiferet in Hebrew means beauty. Well, you understand why chesed, which means kindness, is an emotion. You understand why gevura, which means strictness or strength, is an emotion. Beauty doesn't seem to be something that sounds like an emotion. So why is it one of the sefirot? Well, what do we call beautiful? If I'm going to point to this white ceiling, just plain white, or white wall, plain white wall, and I will ask you, is this wall beautiful? You look at me funny. It's a plain wall of one white color. There's nothing not beautiful about it, but there's nothing beautiful about it either. It's just white. You cannot say whether plain white sheet of paper is beautiful. It's just plain white sheet of paper. To be beautiful, you have to have more than one color or more than one shape, if you're talking about shapes. If I will offer you just one sound, I'll take a piano, I'll press one note, one key on the piano, and one sound is going to be ringing. I'll ask you, is it a beautiful sound? Well, it's just one note. You can't say beautiful or not beautiful if you just hear one note playing. If you hear a combination of notes, then you could say, is this combination beautiful? Yes, I can say it's beautiful, or this one is not beautiful. So whenever you're talking about the beauty, beauty assumes combination, a combination of colors, a combination of shapes, if you are talking about painting or art, or if you look at a structure, if you look at a sculpture, a combination of sounds. If you are talking about music, a combination of words, if it's poetry or prose. So beauty requires combination. If there are several aspects which are combined, then you could say if they're beautiful or not. Sometimes I can put many colors together and it's not going to be beautiful at all. Sometimes I'll put many colors together and it's going to be beautiful. If you put things together, you're running a risk of it being an eyesore, ugly. And I've got even more news for you. The more different colors there are, the harder it is to make them beautiful. The more different sounds there are, the harder it is to make it into a beautiful melody. If you have only two colors, black and white, you know, if you don't know how to dress, wear a white shirt and a black suit, you are guaranteed to always look fine. You'll never go wrong. Two colors, perfect. Well, you'll tell me, yeah, but you will not look as beautiful as you would look if you would have more colors. That's true. The more colors you have, the higher is the risk of looking not beautiful, and the more opportunity you have, if you know what you are doing, to look beautiful. So, beauty, in other words, means harmony. Harmonious combination of different things. And this is why Tiferet is also translated as harmony. Beauty in Jewish understanding requires a harmony. So now we could also look at something different. If you have two different sounds which are very close to each other, it's not going to be so hard to put them together in a harmonious way. If you have very different sounds, putting them together in a harmonious way is going to be harder. If you have two clashing colors, you can create something beautiful out of them if you know what you are doing, and it's going to be hard because that clashing is going to be difficult. But once you create a harmony out of two clashing colors, that's going to be something really beautiful. So in other words, the harder it is to create a harmonious combination out of two components, the more beautiful it will be if you succeed in doing it. This is why if we look at the harmony that we are trying to create here, we see that Chesed and Gvura, which are two opposites of our emotional existence, two diametrically opposed Sferot, when we create a harmony out of them, this is a real beauty. It is very hard to have Chesed and Gvura in a harmonious way together. It's difficult. It is much easier to have other things in our feelings put together. But if we are managing to do it, then it's going to be a real beauty. And this is what Tiferet is. Now, how do we put Chesed and Gvura together? So, one second. Let's figure it out. The two hands. This is my right hand, Chesed. And Chesed wants to give. And it's kind. And this is my left hand, it's Gvura. Gvura does not want to give, it wants to restrict. They are opposite from each other. So let's try that. My right hand is pushing this way. And my left hand is pushing the opposite way. And they clash and which way am I ending up moving my hands? Well, if there are two forces in the opposite direction, which are equal to each other, then the end result, everything is staying where it was, right? I can't move anything. Then what's the point? How can you combine Chesed and Gvura if Chesed wants to move everything in this direction and Gvura wants to move everything in that direction and they are moving in opposite direction, finally they clash and each one is pushing its own agenda? Nothing is happening. So what's the combination here? What's the harmony? What's the beauty? So this is the beauty. As I mentioned to you before, this entire chart is not a balanced presentation of our world. This entire chart is tilting towards Chesed. Do you know why? Because the very top Keter is God's revelation, which is chesed. We spoke about it when we were describing Keter. We were saying that God's revelation is stemming from his desire to have someone who he would love. We said that God created this world because he had a problem. His problem was that he wanted to be kind and to love someone, but to be kind to someone, you have to have someone to be kind to. To love someone, you have to have the object of your love. If you are the only existence, then you have no one to be kind to. You have no one to love. So you are stuck. That's why God created us. God created the world so he will have who to be kind towards and who to love. So in other words, the very beginning of the world was with chesed power. So Keter really stems from the chesed idea. It says, Olam chesed yibaneh. The world is built through chesed. So you can think that, well, it sounds very poetic, that kindness is what is sustaining this world. You see it very often now in poetic media that speaks about the greatness of love and greatness of kindness. The entire world is basing itself on kindness. That's not exactly what the Torah means when it says that. This world is built through chesed, the initial push of God. The motivation that he had to create this world came from chesed, because it was his desire to be kind, his desire to love. And Keter, well, it was God's energy that was coming into this world. And we said that chesed is expansion, influence, giving something. So God was influencing us. God was giving us energy. So this entire chart is tilting towards chesed. It is biased towards chesed. It's not an even balanced system. So if this is not an even balanced system, then obviously chesed is guaranteed to have an upper hand. And this is why in Jewish tradition we write from right to left, because we want chesed to influence gvura, and the right side is the side of chesed and the left side is the side of gvura. When we do everything from right to left, we put on our shoes first right, then left. We put on our clothes first right sleeve, then left sleeve. And we wear our clothes right over left. So we see that chesed is overpowering gevura. And if you have two forces, one from the right side, one from the left side, are clashing against each other, but the right side is stronger, then you're going to end up moving to the right. So the idea of gevura is to limit chesed, to restrict chesed, but not completely eliminate it. It is not counteracting chesed. It is only limiting it to a certain extent. In other words, if I want to give money to all the poor people in the world because I'm a kind person, that's my chesed. Then comes gevura, and gevura says, one second. First of all, do you have enough money for all the poor people in the world? Probably no. I didn't become a multi-billionaire yet. Then the gevura is going to say, one second, are you sure that giving out money like this right and left to poor people around the world is going to be good for them? Maybe it's actually going to be hurting them. There's a Kenyan economist that wrote a book about how UN's donations of food to Kenya are destroying Kenya's economy. And the book is called Please Stop Helping Us, because the UN is sending free food to Kenya all the time, because a lot of years there's not enough crop to feed the entire country. So if there's not enough crop, they send food to feed them and people don't go hungry. That's very good. But then the next year they have enough crop, but the free food is already sent. So what happens? People have a choice between getting free food from the UN or buying food on the market for money. Well, obviously, which one do you think they're choosing? They're getting the free food. So farmers don't have any way of selling their food. So it is killing the farmers. So then that doesn't allow farmers to grow food the next year. It kills their economy. It kills their farming. That's just one example how sometimes kindness could end up being bad. So my gvura is going to be saying, one second, is kindness always good? You know what? Maybe not. Maybe if I'll be kind like this to Kenya, it's going to destroy their farming industry. So gvura on one hand thinks whether I can afford it or not. On the other hand thinks whether it's good for this person or not. So gvura is going to be restricting some of my kindness. But is it going to eliminate my kindness completely? No. I will end up giving money to someone. So it's not killing chesed. It is limiting it. It is narrowing the scope of chesed. And this creates tiferet. Why is it tiferet? Why is it called tiferet? So you are saying, okay, that's just a selection over the right chesed. Pun intended, chesed is always right because gevura is always left. So why is it called tiferet? We see that chesed is still coming through, but we need to understand which chesed is coming through. This is a system of, if you want, chesed's natural selection. Just like the Darwinian theory is telling us about natural selection of species when the strongest are surviving and the weakest are dying off. So if you have a number of animals who are competing for the same resources, then the strongest ones are going to survive. That's natural selection. This guarantees that the future generations will be the offsprings of the stronger ones, so they will be able to be stronger as well. This is natural selection. That's how you have stronger animals. So you have various strains of chesed. You have various desires of chesed. Which ones are going to be able to overcome gevura? Which ones are going to be able to survive? The strongest ones. This is a natural selection of chesed. Survival of the fittest. The fittest ones of all chesed elements is going to stay. And we see a very interesting thing about that. Tiferet in Kabbalah is not compared to chesed, kindness. Tiferet in Kabbalah is also called rachamim, which means mercy. What is the difference between kindness and mercy? In English, very often people get confused between these two terms because kindness sounds sort of like mercy. I'm begging for someone's kindness. I'm begging for someone's mercy. People are merciful and kind. Seems to be very similar. Really, it's not. Why? A kind person wants to give and share. He takes out his last dollar and gives it to someone. What is mercy? Mercy, if I am gvura and I'm coming to chesed and I'm saying, you are giving him money? He doesn't deserve that. Why are you giving it to him? Chesed will think, huh, you know what? I didn't think of it. You're right. Gvura and chesed are on the same playing field. They are combating each other all the time. Chesed wins sometimes, okay, but gvura wins sometimes too, and it's not letting chesed through. So sometimes people end up giving money, sometimes people end up not giving money. But mercy is my desire to give even though I know the person is not worthy of it. Being merciful means, by definition, being kind to those who are not worthy of this kindness. That's what mercy means. We say that God is kind because he gives everything to everyone. But then we say that God is merciful, it means that God has already decided that I'm not worthy of X, Y, and Z. But even though he decided I'm not worthy of it, he's still going to give it to me. So now, if gvura is going to come to mercy, to tiferet, to rachamim, and say, hey, why are you giving this money to this person? He is not worthy of it. Mercy is going to look at gvura. Rachamim is going to look at gvura and say, so what? I know he's not worthy. What else is new? So gvura has no ammunition against tiferet, against mercy. Strictness cannot combat mercy. Strictness can only combat chesed. Now that is beauty. Kindness, which cannot be combated by strictness, kindness that has overcome strictness That is beauty. And that is harmony. Yes, along the way, while Chesed was fighting for its survival, it lost some of its people. I understand. But as a result, Chesed came out only stronger and grew into mercy. So now we understand the idea of Tiferet, which is also harmony, which is also mercy. And our forefathers represent these three Sefirot. Abraham was Chesed. He was a very kind person, and he was conquering the world with kindness. Yitzchak was Gevurah, and he was a strict person. And we said strictness in the Torah is primarily towards yourself. He was a disciplined person. He was a strong person. He was a demanding person of himself. This is Yitzchak, and Tiferet is Yaakov. And our sages also tell us that Avraham had two sons, at least in the beginning, and one of them stayed a Jew. One of them, Ishmael, was not Jewish. Why? Because kindness, chesed, could be very beneficial, but kindness could go astray as well. Kindness could be damaging. Gevurah, strictness, is also very beneficial, but it can be damaging. And that's why Yitzchak had two sons, and one of them was a good Jewish boy, and the other one was not so good. And Yaakov is Tiferet. Tiferet is the harmony of the two. And Yaakov had 13 children, 12 sons and one daughter. And they all remained following their father's footsteps. They all stayed Jewish. They were observant. They were righteous. And this is because Tiferet is harmony. Now, I have to tell you that very often, mistakenly, people look at Tiferet as balance. A balance between Chesed and Gvura. It's not. Balance means 50-50. Or, as they say in Yiddish, nisht ahin or nisht aher. Neither here nor there. I want to have 100, you want to have 0. Let's split the difference, 50. Fine. But they say mediation results in mutually unsatisfactory result. So balance is the mutually unsatisfactory result. Tiferet does not mean that. Tiferet is mutually satisfactory result. Gevura is sifting away the weak elements of chesed, and that's why it is playing a role in Tiferet. Chesed is retaining some of its parts, and that's why it's playing role in Tiferet. So we see that really Chesed and Gevurah play the same role in Tiferet as Chochmah and Binah in Da'at. Why? Because just like Chesed, Chochmah is just this initial idea, the push. When people have some new brainstorm, when they jump out of a bathtub screaming Eureka, and they have this new idea, that's a chesed mode. And then Binah is same as Gvura. Binah starts thinking, one second, is this really a good idea? Let me try to figure it out. Binah is sifting through some of the Chochmah brainstorms. Sometimes, if I have a brainstorm, as soon as it gets to Binah, Binah is going to shut it down right away. You know what? You better forget about it. ASAP. Don't even think about it. That's a dangerous path. Sometimes Binah is going to say, well, this part of it is good, this part of it is not good. Sometimes Binah is going to say, no, that's a very good idea, but we need to think how to implement it and how to work through it. So you can say that Binah is restricting Chochmah, and in a way it does, and that is its role in Da'at. Because Chochmah cannot get to Da'at without Binah. It's just impossible. Just like Chesed cannot get to Tiferet without Gevurah. It's impossible. So Da'at is the synthesis of Chochmah and Binah. It's a harmony of Chochmah and Binah. And Tiferet is the synthesis of Chesed and Gevurah. It's harmony of Chesed and Gevurah. And then also, we can see one other interesting thing. I showed you how Chochmah and Chesed, being both on the right and a part of the right column, are similar to each other. Binah and Gevurah are both on the left and they're similar to each other in its function, we have three elements of the middle column which are also similar to each other: Keter, Da'at, and Tiferet. Keter is the initial energy that God is sending to this world. And in our emotional being, this is the initial drive that we have. If I have a push, a motivation, a drive, it has to go through Chochmah and Binah, obviously. They have to be analyzed. But then it comes into my understanding of the world, my worldview, how I feel myself, how I identify myself, how I perceive the world around me. It becomes who I am. And this is Da'at. So Keter and Da'at are intrinsically connected. Da'at is essentially putting together who I see myself to be and how I perceive the world around me. This is me in my own understanding. That's what Da'at is. And then through that, it goes to Tiferet. Because I have Chesed and Gvurah, which are combating each other. They are obviously fighting, but once they fought it out, and once the synthesis is created, now again, this is what I am left with. Well, I shouldn't say this is what I'm left with. I should say this is what I'm centered with. So now we understand why Keter, Da'at, and Tiferet are in the middle line. And this is why it is also said in Kabbalah that Da'at has an intrinsic deep connection to Keter, and Tiferet is also connected directly to Keter. The middle column has its own inner dimension. The purpose of this world is harmony. Keter is coming down here to have a harmony. Harmony of Chesed and Gvura, harmony of various elements, which are not connected to each other on the surface. They are completely separate from each other. But when we create a harmony, we create Tiferet. And this is why the idea of one God is so important. Why do we keep repeating to ourselves and to others, there's only one God, one God, one God, there's one force that runs this world. We say it in Shema, we say it a million other times in our liturgy, in the Torah, in everywhere. One God. Who cares? Well, we live in a very disfranchised world. We live in a world where there are so many elements and they all seem to be completely disconnected from each other. Each one is on their own. There's a tree, there's a car, there's a house, there's me, there's you. What do I have to do with you? What do you have to do with me? I don't know. We are so different. I look this way, you look that way, and you look third way, and then there are some people who you would not want to look at in the first place. It's just terrible. So why should we all even assume that there is a connection between us? So the Torah is telling us that we all, despite of our differences, despite how we look, and despite how we feel, and despite who we think we are, we're all coming from one source, from Keter, from this one initial energy that God has created this world with. Okay, that's great, but at the end, we are still different, and there's no connection between us. Yes, but if we will find a way of creating a harmony, if you'll find a way of completing each other, because that's what harmony is, if you'll find a way how you, in spite of the fact that you look different, can benefit from me, and I can benefit from you, and not only that, you cannot live without me, and I cannot live without you, we are creating harmony, and then we are beginning to reflect the initial idea, the initial starting point of this world, which is Keter. So in other words, imagine that God gave us a puzzle that we have a very hard time putting together. But once we will manage to make this, we will make it look like it was originally designed before it was broken up into pieces. This is what Tiferet is. Tiferet is this unity that we find in seemingly unrelated elements of this world. And we are looking for this unity only because we know that originally, when this puzzle was first created, it was all one picture, it was one painting. They broke it up into pieces later on. But for now, these pieces look completely separate, and we need to find a way how they come together. So now we understand what Tiferet is. So Tiferet is the synthesis between Chesed and Gevura. It's not a balance, it's a harmony. In Hebrew, Tiferet is beauty. Tiferet is also a way of putting things together in a harmonious way, a way of combining things in a way that they match each other. And Tiferet is also called mercy, rachamim, in Kabbalah, because it is the part of Chesed that we're able to overcome Gevura that come into Tiferet. And this is why Tiferet is mercy. It is much more powerful than Chesed. Chesed can be stopped by Gevura, or at least partially stopped by Gevura. Tiferet cannot be stopped by Gevura, because Tiferet has already overcome the limitations of Gevura. Tiferet are the parts of Chesed which are stronger than Gevura. And that's why it's beautiful.